Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. This is your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and we are going to be releasing two this week, and this is the second one. We just released one a couple of days ago, but we wanted to strike while the iron is hot with the topic of the Meet the Mormons movie, documentary film, however we want to call it, and we'll discuss kind of what that film is and what it isn't, and sort of just deal with the online buzz about it and kind of read tea leaves about what the church is trying to do, how it's playing out, our own reactions to the film and things like that. And so Meet the Mormons, in some ways this is a Mormon Matters going back to its roots of what's in the air this week. And we're now heading into the second weekend when the movie's going to be in release. And so we just thought we'd do a quick show on it. So I'm thrilled to have back with us for Jody England Hansen, who was on recently about our Christ podcast. And Jody, would you remind everybody a little bit about who you are, background, where you live, all that good stuff?
My name is Jody England Hansen. I live in the Denver area in Lakewood, and I'm a mixed media artist. I was talking to Dan about the prayer flags I make last time, and I do paintings and sculptures and one-of-a-kind books. And right now I'm the gospel doctrine teacher in my ward. My children, Mike and I have three children, all grown, all living in Salt Lake.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Brian Whitney, welcome to Mormon Matters for the first time. You're certainly a well-known commentator on lots of Facebook groups and blogs and things. So would you tell us a little bit about you?
Thanks. I guess that just means that I spend too much time on Facebook. My name is Brian Whitney. I am a student at Weber State University. I major in history, minor in sociology. My emphasis is in American religious studies. I was an intern for the LDS Church History Department for about a year and a half with the Joseph Smith Papers. And this summer, actually, I worked for the Community of Christ out in Nauvoo, doing site tours and a research fellowship with them as well. And that was just neat. I'm probably the only person who has had the distinction of working for both the LDS Church History Department and the Community of Christ.
Nice.
I'm married. I've got a gaggle of kids. I have four kids currently on the ground with number five on the way.
Wow.
Yeah. It'll be three girls by the time of by the time we get to end of January. It'll be three girls and two boys. Just baptized my youngest son this past weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So three are baptized right now, and two are up and coming.
Neat. Thanks. Michael Barker from Rational Face. Everybody is a veteran podcaster here, and his brother cracked me up when I listened to their fun banter. But Mike's got a great personality and is certainly an important voice in the internet. But Michael, would you tell us a little bit about where you live and all the good stuff?
Yeah, I think everyone's going to be completely underwhelmed with me. So I am a
what?
I'm a physician assistant by career. I work in orthopedic surgery. My brothers and I started a blog about 2 years ago called Rational Faiths. And I've never lived in Utah or the Mormon corridor, so I kind of have an outsider's view, but not quite as cool as Gina Colvin. I've been married for 18 years to my wife, Kathy, who's a dental hygienist and a stay-at-home mom. And I have two daughters, 8 and 12, who are super, super funny.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, let's dive in. And, you know, we're in some ways, you know, we don't want to pretend that no one's ever heard of this movie, but we ought to probably at least do a little bit of a description of what the movie is and that it is in fairly wide release. I mean, it's certainly not like studio-wide release, you know, but it's in quite a few states and theaters, and I don't know how many of them have continued to hold it over for the second weekend. But let's just describe the movie. Who here wants to call it a documentary?
I don't think any of us want to
call it. Okay, good. Okay, so it's a film, and that's a good distinction to make, because, you know, you would expect with a documentary that there would be some attempt to, you know, present the complexity of the subject, and this is absolutely not that. It's almost more of a celebration. Jody, in one of your comments that I read online, you just simply said we should probably look at this movie for what it is, and what is it that you would say that it is?
I consider it a type of a promotional, possibly it could be seen as an introduction of sorts, but it seemed to me to be perfect for a visitor center movie. And then I found out that that is originally what was intended when it was written and directed, and whatever decision was made to turn it into a wide release, apparently that came along after the original idea, and I think it would be a perfect thing to have at a visitor center or on a DVD that's easy to be shared that way. I don't see it as something that's going to attract too many non-members or people who haven't already been a part of the church into theaters to pay the price that is asked to go to a theater.
Michael, Jody mentioned members going, you know, it's more not too many non-members going. Are you up on the latest stats on, they've done some surveys about audiences and what percentage were LDS and things?
I haven't seen that, but I got how much money the movie's making, and I think it tells a lot.
Okay.
So opening day Friday, it brought in a little over $1 million. The second day Saturday, it brought over a little over $1 million. Sunday, it brought $64,000.
That's right. Yeah, so we'll tell you something. Yeah.
And then we get the Monday family home evening bump at $690,000 and change. And then today, so far,
$295,000.
Okay. So it tells you that people are not seeing it on Sundays. I don't know why. Oh, yes, because it's the Mormons that are seeing it. That's right. They don't go to church on Sunday. They don't go to movies on Sunday.
Did you see that one post that someone posted where a local state president pretty much spoke to congregations saying it would not be breaking the Sabbath to go and see this movie on Sunday?
My wife read that to me.
Now, the question to ask back to that bishop is, would it be breaking the law of tithing if I deducted it from my tithing?
Oh, nice.
Oh, snap. No, you didn't.
Anyway, well, I had heard something like 91%. I don't know where that stat came from, where LDS, that I guess of the exit polls or whatever. But so I think you're right, Jody. It is absolutely geared towards Mormons, at least when it comes to the theatrical release. And if it is in the Visitor Center, if it is in Legacy Theater, then we have to imagine that they had a non-Mormon audience in mind. You know, certainly, you know, a lot of Mormons do come to Temple Square and visitor centers, but I think in that case they were definitely trying to do a wider introduction as well.
Has everybody seen Elder Holland's video about the movie?
I did. Do you want to share? Do you want to describe it, and then I'll definitely link to it.
Yeah. So he described exactly what Jody said, that this was initially filmed to be in the Legacy Theater for the Visitor Center. So definitely a, you know, what you said, Dan, the aspect of having visitors coming and seeing this, both LDS and non-LDS audiences. And then he said it was after going through the screen testing on it, that the results from it were impressive enough to consider doing a nationwide distribution on the film. Particularly what they were interested in was how people knew the name of the church, the full name of the church, better afterwards, and had a higher likelihood of considering church members to be Christian after the film. So those were some of the big factors that led into getting nationwide release.
Yeah.
I think personally, and I know that they were trying to ramp up numbers to keep the film extended in theaters, but I also think that they're looking at how to get this on licensed on like Netflix afterwards.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Have anybody else heard that angle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it. I heard some.
There were a lot of suggestions as to what was required for it to be on Netflix, and one person said they did the wide release so they could get on Netflix, and someone else said that's not needed. There are plenty of things on Netflix that don't have a commercial release. You know, so I've heard a lot of different suggestions as to the desire to have it available on Netflix streaming, but if not on Netflix, on some kind of a church site that where it can be streaming, but to make it available streaming.
Okay, good. And was there some number that they were trying to hit, Brian, that had Netflix? Is it more attractive to Netflix when it does a certain amount of box office or something?
No, I don't know the nuances for Netflix. Jody's right, though, that not everything on Netflix has been wide released box office successes. I know that there's a licensing cost, and I believe that it's usually Netflix that's paying the licensing
right.
fee to the, you know, to whoever they're getting the material from. And I couldn't imagine that when it comes to the church, I couldn't imagine that they're going to really require much of anything for a licensing fee on this because they really just want to get it out there. That'd be my assumption.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Netflix has Aquabats on it, right? And which is, right. I mean, it wasn't released anywhere and it's good. Okay.
Yeah, awesome. And lots of independent films and things that obviously never played in more than 80 theaters nationwide or something. Well, Michael, let me turn it to you for a second. So Jody kind of gave us the initial framing of what the film was and that it was a visitor center film. Do you want to just why don't you just do the basic description of, you know, it's in, you know, seven parts effectively if you kind of count the person on the street stuff at the beginning and then just what the vignettes are and just sort of describe the film for those who haven't heard of it or seen.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it follows six different Mormons worldwide, and all their stories I really liked. You first start with Bishop Jermaine Sullivan. Bishop in Atlanta, Georgia. I've seen that he's possibly a stake president now, which is pretty cool.
That's what I've heard. Uh-huh.
Next have Coach Niamatololo. He's the head football coach at U.S. Naval Academy. Then Carolina Munoz from Costa Rica. She's an MMA fighter, which was kind of cool because the Barker family boxes right now, so that was fun watching.
Well, you know,
that.
And it was interesting. She seemed to be training in kickboxing, but they were all wearing MMA shirts. It seemed
like
everybody at her gym, so I wasn't quite clear if she was a full-on MMA, you know, cage fighter type thing or if she's more of strictly a kickboxer.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway.
I heard...
But she's definitely tough, and it's about her husband too, as the coach, and kind of some choices that they've made, obviously, to not to turn super professional and all that kind of stuff. So,
and then you have Bishnu Adhikari. He's a engineer from Nepal who goes back to Nepal after being, you know, receiving his education in the States, and does some pretty fantastic humanitarian work. We then have Colonel Gail Halverson, and this is going to show you how far removed I am from Utah. I had never heard of the story of the candy bomber or Gail Halverson until this story. So shame on me. And then
it was pretty neat to know the extent of the thing that he started for sure.
It was pretty amazing. And then Dawn Armstrong, her story, my little commentary, I loved the most, but it was also the most difficult for me. She was a young lady who became pregnant twice as a teenager. And then there's some issues of race in there and ends up essentially the church does her a lot of good. Is that good enough summation for everything?
Yeah. So the six vignettes, and it's Jenna Kim Jones is the narrator throughout the whole thing, and she's an actress, comedian, kind of well known. I guess she used to work for Jon Stewart's Daily Show or something like that, and so she's kind of the host. And then they do begin with, you know, I think they're trying to be funny to show how ignorant people are about Mormonism. So that's the beginning section, and then she just kind of ties it all together through the narration. So I think that anything else anyone would say as far as description-wise, just sort of the facts of the film?
I think you pretty well got it. Halvorsen, so I'd heard of Halvorsen before, but that's just because I watch a lot of nerdy PBS documentaries. But I've never heard him being connected with his faith before. So that was a pleasant surprise for me. I knew the Candy Bomber. I knew about what they called the Vittles project in East Berlin. But to know that it was led by an LDS guy was kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay, so let's wrestle with a little bit more of the cultural push for the film and all that's happening there. So there was quite a bit of buzz, and I'd say we're hearing around the country that the cities that had the film showing up, there was a big push among, I don't know, through regional channels or something, would you guys say, to have it announced in congregations? And it seems like there were efforts in some areas to, you know, have each ward sell 100 tickets and, you know, show up, and they wanted you to show up on the opening night. And wasn't there even a midnight screening or two in some places that were packed? And it was just kind of this big thing that people got excited about, and let's kind of do you guys sense it was, let's show the Mormon power, let's show the theater owners that we need more stuff like this?
I didn't get that sense in my ward at all. In fact, nobody in my ward spoke about it. I think maybe one person brought it up in Sunday school that the movie was coming out, but there was never an announcement made over the stand. There was never an attempt to buy group lot tickets. Half the people that I spoke to weren't aware of the movie, and I was the first person that they had heard about it from. So I'm sure that it varies from ward to ward, but and our ward is pretty close to a pretty big AMC Lowe's movie theater. But there was just like zero buzz for it in my ward.
Okay. Now you're in Utah with me. So
yeah.
It's kind of both more and less here because of the Salt Lake Tribune and things was covering it all week and things like that. But yet in some ways, Jody, you in Colorado, and Michael, you in Oregon, were you more aware of as non Zion livers dwellers? was there more buzz in your areas about let's fill these seats?
Well, I can tell you, my bishop is not prone to put on a big push for non actual church meeting stuff. That's my husband, and so. There was an announcement, but not a lot of push. There wasn't some kind of quota we were trying to meet. I don't sense that he felt much pressure. We knew that we would go and see it probably the first weekend. We didn't feel pressured to do it, but I know other people just were really bothered that it was even announced at church. But I have heard some people, it was talked about several times. There was actually lesson time devoted to it. That has not been our experience in our stake. So I can see how some members and some leaders would feel automatically link it to, you know, our devotion means we've got to really promote this, and other people it's like, yeah, well, whatever. I have things to do. And yeah, I'll fit it in if I can fit it in. And that's, I actually found it interesting. I was visiting with some friends in a group that we get together and discuss books, and it's not an official link to anything except the fact that we all happen to be Mormon. And this was brought up, and several of them are really quite conservative in a lot of ways. And they actually were wondering, I'm not sure how I feel about this. And it
feel about it being announced, or just feel like the church is getting into the let's get movies and theater business?
Yeah, that the movie itself, not how it's promoted or anything. They didn't even get that up. But it's like, what do you think of this? You're going to go and see it? I'm not sure. At least one woman there expressed it, and it honestly surprised me that she is the one who was bringing that up. But overall, everyone said, yeah, I think no matter how this is released, I see it as something that would be a good thing in some way for us as members. Everyone there acknowledged that even though all of us had invited friends who are not members, no one had accepted the invitation. And none of us really felt pressure to try. None of us really saw any way that we could really promote it to a non-member in any convincing way. It's like, hey, I'm going to this movie. You know me. We're good friends. Is this something you'd like to come and see? That was about as far as the invitation went.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, talk personally in your area, but also I know you kind of been watching, you know, the events unfold and the reports that are happening out there on the internet about kind of some of the cultural forces.
Yeah. So the way I knew about it was because of members being upset, not in my area, but members being upset with the push for it over the pulpit. And that's kind of, it made me a little crazy, even though it did not happen here in Southern Oregon at all. I was speaking with Wendy Montgomery, who lives in Central California, and she's a big LGBT ally because her son's gay. And she was upset because of the big push down there in Central California. And she ended up writing an essay actually to the point of, you know, why is the church doing this? And for 3 years we've had Mormons and Gays, you know, .org.
The website,
Yeah, no one's saying boo about that. And I thought she had a good argument there. But here in Southern Oregon, it's been relatively quiet. Now, that being said, we were Monday night, we were boxing. And as we're leaving, there's a member of another stake that was there with his son. And he goes, and it just so happens that his sister is my oldest daughter's piano teacher. Okay, so there's the setup. And he says, hey, when you go see my sister for piano lessons, ask her how she liked Meet the Mormons. My sister, she went out to go see it today. And so Monday night after boxing, we went to go see Box Trolls as a family. And sure enough, in our Cinemark theater, they had a roped-off area for the movie. And there are people from my ward there, from other stakes there. And they're just talking and chatting. And it was kind of like what Jody, you're saying, you know, it's the Mormons. And, you know, we here in Southern Oregon, there wasn't, like I said, there wasn't a big push for it. And all my things I got irritated about was just what I was reading online about it. So, you know, I wasn't going to see it initially until I decided I needed to.
Right. And even though Elder Holland did that little 4 or 5 minute video kind of introducing it and stuff like that, we don't sense that there was anything orchestrated from Salt Lake at all in terms of the church leaders, right, to push local folks to do this. It just happened to be that some did, and it was probably more just the distribution arm of the company that was distributing it that was, you know, hoping to get people excited to kind of apply this sort of financial boost to the film.
Yeah. Well, Elder Bednar had also mentioned it in one of his devotional addresses.
Okay. Oh.
I do have a question. When I didn't bother to look when Elder Holland's YouTube video about it came out, because I actually didn't hear about that or see that until like just moments before I sent it to you, Dan. So I don't know how old that is. Do you guys have any idea?
I haven't seen it, but I would like to. So
okay,
I'll provide the link. Brian, do you know?
I didn't pay attention to when it was posted on YouTube. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no. The other thing is, I mean, speaking of the push, I mean, I did read online, so of course, you know, take it for what it's worth. Someone in Idaho saying that their stake president was pushing it really hard, and that came from – and the reason he was pushing it was because he was getting pushed by the regional representative. So although, yeah, you can't say it came from Salt Lake, I think some people – it went beyond the bishop, beyond the stake president.
Okay. Yeah, but nothing super orchestrated.
This is an interesting point, and I don't know if you want to get into it on this podcast, but I know about Wendy's post, that blog that she did about this. She's a friend of mine. We both have gay sons, and we are both very concerned about the church publicizing some of the things that people still have a hard time realizing are available through church sources, such as Mormons and gays, especially Mormons and gays, because it's a teeny little step in the right direction. We see the impact of members not feeling that there's any kind of an official statement of acceptance. We see that day to day. We see people's lives at stake. We know of those who have taken their own lives because of this kind of an attitude. So it is difficult when something like this, which really is only being seen by members, has so many resources put behind it. At the same time, I do think some people have turned it into their own project at whatever level of the church they are. They've turned it into a bigger project than I think if the entire quorum were making a decision on it, I don't think they necessarily would have done the same thing. So how much do I want to be upset about this? I already put an awful lot of energy into trying to raise awareness. I can't do a lot about someone else's decision, whether or not they're going to put an awful lot of what I see church resources or pressure on church leaders to promote this when they haven't put that kind of pressure on church leaders to be aware of and make others aware of something like Mormons and gays. So that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Interesting. Brian, when you hear about Wendy's post and things like that and this, is it fair to kind of like, is it opportunistic or something like that, would you say, to make too big a deal about that, to tie these side issues? And I guess I'm thinking in the wider question too of, there's lots of people who kind of said, well, this doesn't deal with any complexities of Mormonism. It doesn't deal with any historical, you know, I was taking notes. I kind of sat in the corner and had my, you know, phone for a little light to, you know, to take notes and things like this. There wasn't a single mention of Joseph Smith in there. There wasn't really anything at all that, you know, are push button type of issues. Even when they had the Navy coach teaching his primary class, you know, he's just teaching about the resurrection, and everything was Christ oriented and things like this. And so this is it's one of those things where this is what the movie is, and yet it isn't what I want it to be. So how do you feel about, you know, tying issues together like that? And I'm putting you on the spot, and you can tell me to go to heck.
No, I wouldn't do that. So I think that people bring up a legitimate point when they say that there doesn't seem to be as many resources put into things like awareness of Mormons and gays. It seems that was just kind of slipped in. I would say the same thing for like the gospel topics essays, right? So they're just kind of slipped into the website, not a lot of promotional effort behind them. And understandably so, these are touchy issues. There's a big split in people's thinking on these issues. They cause a lot of emotions. And I don't know that this film, particularly given, as we've already discussed, that it's really meant to be kind of a visitor center film, I don't know that this film is really the appropriate venue for bringing out the complexities of stuff. As we've established, it's not a documentary. I would expect that in a documentary, right?
Right, exactly.
Like Helen Whitney's PBS documentary on the Mormons, which she did a great job of speaking to people like Mike Quinn and Richard Bushman and Terrell Givens and Elder Oaks, and getting a lot of different variety of perspectives to kind of mete out the nuances and the tensions within Mormonism. This film was never intended to go anywhere near that. Right. If anything, it's really kind of an expansion of the I'm a Mormon campaign more than anything else. It's kind of the same thematic elements of that, trying to showcase some diversity in the church. In this case, trying to showcase a lot of diversity in the church and really trying to expand on its internationalization and its globalization as a church. And Dan, you've had conversations before, particularly with Gina Colvin, who is delightful to talk to about this issue of what does it mean for the church to go international and versus it becoming a world religion, right? And it seems like what I see in this film is kind of what I'm gonna throw out a super geeky reference here, but kind of what Dr. Armand Moss talked about in The Angel and the Beehive. For any listeners who have read that book, at the end of the book, he concludes it with his predictions of what Mormonism would become in the next 20 years. Now, this book was published in 1994, but he made a prediction that the church would continue to expand globally and that it would become a world religion in the same sense that Jan Shipps had also argued that it would become a world religion, not just an international church. But the means to do that would mean having to pare down its message to its absolute basic essentials so that it can be translated across continental lines, right, and across different cultures and traditions. And so I wonder if we aren't seeing some of that in the messages of this film, getting away from such Mormon-centric messages and getting more with general, as you said, Christian, generally accepted Christian messages. So part of it's trying to make other Christians feel comfortable with us. And then another part of it, I think, is looking at how does this translate to our expanding missionary areas.
Yeah, yeah. Let's reflect on that a little bit more. Let's go back. Michael and Jody, was it fair for Wendy to make this a moment, you know, to talk about her issue and to kind of complain? Is it a complaint? It's not so much a complaint about the film. It's a complaint about the resources and you know, the effort to say that this is out there. Is that what, and you guys find that fine? Because, you know, a lot of times I'll read somebody's book review or a film review, and it's like, they didn't write the book that I would have liked to have seen written, and it just never feels fair to me. You know what I mean?
I'm not going to criticize what Wendy said at all, because I can relate too much to her passion and her concern. And I'm not so sure that it wasn't so much that she was criticizing the movie. I think it was more along the lines of, why is so much effort being put into promoting this?
Right. And I guess the earlier question, though, is how much effort really was put into promoting it?
Right. And that's the thing that's debatable to me. And it's one reason I'm not as concerned about the general promotion of it. One thing that I've learned over the years in my own experience is that there will always be, when you get into an organization as large as the church has become and probably will continue to only get bigger, there are people at all levels get passionate about something that they feel or guided will be the biggest and best and most important thing for them to do for the sake of the church. And I have a feeling that there were some people who saw this as that, and they took it up and turned it into that. We may never know who or how many. We may never know who at what level saw it as that. But to me, that's what I see as happening with this. And I cannot really see a lot of good at criticizing someone else for being passionate about a project. I would just like to see the opportunity and the ability for more people to feel that they can do the same thing with more controversial things.
The church.
Yeah, people in the church at different levels, even at the highest levels, could possibly see that it would be okay to be as passionate and turn something into a project that does deal with things that have caused concern or pain or people to struggle or not feel a place. That there are other things that could address those things as well, and that people at all levels might feel really passionate about, and yet they don't feel that they can safely do that or that they can get any kind of an official resource or voice behind an attempt to do that. And that's the thing that I think is a valid point to make is that if someone sees something like this, just like I think other things as well, certain buildings, certain complexes, certain projects, that someone really felt this would be great for the church and I'm going to make it happen, and that they really can get backing and money and support, or at least a voice for making those things happen. Whereas I know there are people at different levels who want to make a bigger deal out of Mormons and gays, who want to make a bigger deal out of women's issues, who want to make a bigger deal out of historical issues and the gospel topics. And yet safely, they can't seem to get much beyond what's been done.
Thanks. Michael, jump in with, I kind of threw it out there about, you know, because there's so many people that are bringing so much to this, to the discussion of this film, that really isn't about the film itself. It's about, I didn't get what I wanted, or I'm not, you know, so talk about that however you'd like.
Yeah, so I kind of have two views on it. First, regarding Wendy, I think from her perspective, I totally get it, because this was coming over the pulpit in her ward, where, for those of you who don't know the story, when her son came out as gay, people wouldn't take the sacrament from him. Young men's leaders were wondering whether or not it was okay for him to change in the locker rooms for baptisms of the dead, for the dead. They had to leave that ward, eventually were able to get their records transferred. So that's been Wendy's experience with her son, and then with what's happened with this movie. So her, I don't even call it a reaction. I'm sorry, Jody.
That's
go ahead.
Just, I'm sorry to intercede, but that's just a drop in the bucket.
Oh yeah. No.
Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right, Jody. So yeah, that's just a little piece of what this wonderful family has had to deal with, and then to get this at the ward level, you know, I understand, Wendy. Well, I don't have a gay son. I don't have any gay children, but I can understand why Wendy wrote what she did. I wouldn't even say it was a reaction. I think it was something very thoughtful and valid. On the other hand,
and I hadn't even planned to bring her up when you mentioned it first.
No.
You know, and it's one of many people out there that wrote about things that the film, you know, they wrote things that weren't really about the film, but they got tied to the film, and they've shaped people's perception of this film.
I agree. Because, like, even on my Facebook wall, someone said this movie is propaganda. And why is it propaganda? Because it's full of half truths, and this does not represent Mormonism. I thought, well, that's just kind of stupid, you know, for lack of a better word. You know, that's not a very thoughtful thing. That you're just lashing out and you're just kind of being angry about it. You know,
right.
That doesn't move the discussion anywhere.
Yeah. So tell me, so in general, we're all kind of in agreement that the film on its own merits and kind of what seems to be the history of how this even decided to go public, you know, it's fine that there's all these other discussions about it, but let's not tie it too heavily to the film. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that the film has triggered some emotions in people, but like you said, I think it really is a separate issue. But, you know, fine, it's bringing up some conversations. It's making people, you know, feel like this is a forum to discuss, like Jody said, resources and how they're being expended within the church. Totally valid conversation.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, sparked from the film, not necessarily reflective of the content of the film.
Okay. The other criticisms, Michael, do you want to give a sense of just take us on a tour through those and feel free to share any that seem to be stronger for you as well?
Yeah, so Jody talked about it a little bit, and we were, you know, the title itself would indicate that this movie is not for Mormons, right? Meet the Mormons.
Ah, interesting.
Right? Today, my wife worked today, and her dentist, surprise, surprise, is Mormon. So anyway, the dentist she works with is Mormon. They get into some heated debates, and he told her, well, I think this is a great proselyting tool. I actually think that many Mormons think that this is a proselyting tool. It's not. And so when I went to see the movie with my 12-year-old daughter on Saturday, We get in the theater. She sees some friends. She waves at them. I see some people from the ward. And when we're done, we're walking to the car. I go, Milena, what's the name of this movie? I don't know. So I pull out the ticket and I showed it to her. She'll meet the Mormons. I go, who's the movie for? Well, I guess people that weren't Mormon. I go, yeah. She goes, so why was the theater full of Mormons then?
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm not saying the church was I'm not saying the church was being duplicitous at all, but I think the church, I think it was, the film was, it made me feel good. I'll say that. I cried.
Yeah, I liked it too. I was emotional in a few spots as well.
Yeah. But it was a bit of navel gazing. And I think, and I honestly think Mormons think that it's a proselyting tool. And I'll tell you what, my evangelical friends that I work with in the operating room aren't going to see the movie. Because if they want to talk about Mormonism, they'll talk to me about it, you know?
Yeah. But is it a proselytizing tool when the fact that it was made for the visitor center, and it will serve as that, won't it? Especially when we hear what Adler Holland says, the test groups that I'm assuming were non-Mormon test groups, if he's, you know, kind of saying, you know, what the results were, you know, that it changed people's perceptions. In some ways, you can't say that it isn't a proselytizing tool. It's just not going to serve that way in wide release.
Yeah, that's interesting because I was on Friday, the surgeon with whom I work was on. He saw that this movie's coming out. He goes, Mike, are you going to see this? And I said, no, I'm not going to see that, dude. He goes, why? And I kind of went into it a little bit. And then today we were at work and I told him I saw it. And he's, you know, we chatted about it. And I explained to him the background that was supposed to be, you know, at the Legacy Theater. And I go, you know, and most people that visit Temple Square are LDS. He goes, yeah, but he goes, you know, I've visited Temple Square. And I go, yeah, but the majority are LDS, and the majority of the people that go to the Legacy Theater are LDS. I mean, I'm not saying that non-LDS people don't visit Temple Square, because they do, because they have missionaries there, right? I'm not saying non-LDS people don't go to Legacy Theater, because they do. But I think it was giving us a pat on the back a little bit, but I also think it did some good things for the church, which, I mean, we can get into later, I guess, if you want, after the criticisms.
Well, did you see the Kirby column, Robert Kirby column?
Yeah.
How he wants to make a movie called Meet the Real Mormons.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he made some really good points about it. Basically, some of the things we've been talking about, but I think it is a proselyting. It's just going to proselyte more to Mormons.
Yeah, it definitely makes us feel better about ourselves, right? And these are pretty unique people.
Yeah. The more Western Mormons who see this, I think the better. I think it's important for church members to open their eyes a little bit. We were talking about the worldwide church. I think we need to really confront a lot of attitudes in the Western world about what it means to become a worldwide church. And I think you're right. I think this is a step towards that.
Can I make an observation about Temple Square?
Please.
So I had the opportunity of working right off of Temple Square at the Church History Library for a year and a half, which means that I walked through Temple Square every single day while I was down there. And so I got a pretty good idea for the mix of people that were around Temple Square. And you definitely do get the vibe that it's mostly Mormons, either out of town visitors or locals who are bringing their family members who are visiting to Temple Square. But at the same time, and I saw this mostly like during summer, you would see large international tour groups come through on Temple Square. And I think that's interesting when you think about the flavor of this film and what it's really trying to say. We are an international people.
But only two of the six segments are international.
Yeah.
The Nepal and Costa Rica with the kickboxer. I guess you get a Polynesian football coach. So obviously he's from an islander background.
Yeah, so more
of some
than
sort.
Just locale, it's also racial diversity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say that's probably one of the strengths of the movie is that, I mean, I visit Utah once a year, and it's
Sunstone doesn't count, Michael.
True, it's usually involved with the family reunion. So anyway, So I go, and you know, I run into people that have never left the Mormon corridor, right? So they have this view of the world that is kind of different, and I think it's good to challenge them to see a black bishop, right?
Sure.
I think it's good for them to see a man from Nepal and see the little bit of tension that exists between his culture and how his parents felt, and him accepting this really interesting brand of Christianity. I think it's was good to see the boxer from Costa Rica, although there's some problems with that story too. So in that sense, I almost feel that the movie was made to wake up the Mormon people in Utah. This is an internet. This is an international church, you know.
Yep, but they didn't really play up the differences, because, like, even when they showed the church service in Nepal, they showed them singing in English, even though almost every other person there was being translated from, you know, I don't even know what language they speak there, you know. But yeah. But you know,
that surprised me.
Yeah, so when they still did it, it almost like, oh, correlation is this wonder thing that everywhere you go, it's going to be exactly the same.
Yeah,
and so I thought they missed an opportunity there. Yeah,
I was expecting to see minivans in the parking lot as they panned out.
Exactly. Yes. No. But but on the other hand, they did address it head on with, like, I don't feel bad, you know, doing the practices of my country and my culture, you know, even though I'm a Mormon. And so, you know, his father was just thrilled that he still would kiss his feet or put his forehead to his feet, you know, when the son, who's the Mormon, visits his father in the village and things like that. And so it was nice to at least have them openly say, you know, I separate culture from Mormonism.
And we talked earlier about simplifying the message, the essential message, in order for it to be able to be received. I think that's what it's going to take. And as we mentioned earlier, and I put this on my comment on Facebook, if this were widely shown, especially to Western Mormons, and I'm hoping people will look at it and see, hey, the most Christ-like people on here, the people who are making the biggest difference in the world, don't look or live like Utah Mormons. And I think if that message gets out to members of the church, that's the more powerful proselyting. That we as Westerners have a lot to think about when we're taking on that mission to care for each other and to be Christ-like worldwide. We've got a long way to go compared to Vishnu in Kathmandu. And even in Costa Rica, from what I could tell, that, you know, they kind of had this ongoing work that they do with their business to have an impact, to collect donations and to reach out and work with others in need in the community. And so I appreciated that a lot, and I think that's one of the more powerful parts of the message. And it's going to be seen by members more than anyone else, and I think members more than anyone else need to see that.
Amen.
Yeah, absolutely, Jody. What I was thinking of while you were saying that is, I think it affected me as well, in that I just accepted a new calling last night as our ward mission leader. Probably my least favorite calling in the church. This is my second go around. I was a ward mission leader in Seattle, and now here. And I'll be upfront. I absolutely hate proselyting. I don't see a place for it in my life. I am not comfortable with it. I'm one of those kind of people that encourages people to explore their own religious traditions and faith. If you grew up as an Anglican and you find meaning in that, explore it deeper.
Right.
I don't feel any sort of an impotence to try to get people even really to reactivate per se, unless there's a strong desire for them to reconnect to the community. But at any rate, I think that this movie, in a way, kind of helped me rethink the possibilities of what I could be doing in that role. So when I spoke with my bishop last night, and he interviewed me for this position, I let him know that what I would be primarily interested in doing is community service and working with other groups, local groups, even interfaith groups, to providing community service. And that I would see that as a missional tool, not necessarily for converting or preaching or proselyting, but for actually doing what Christ tells us to do. Right. So if you think of mission in the sense of like the Catholic mission of providing food and shelter, right. You know, not in the sense of how we consider a mission of going out and proclaiming the gospel, but doing it through your service and doing it through your words. And he was very receptive to that. Yeah. But I think that this movie kind of sparked that in me.
Nice. So if you hadn't seen it, you might not have said those words to him, and he would have been expecting a more typical approach.
I think so. Yeah, I really Interesting. Do. Because this movie really re-emphasized to me the necessity of humanitarian efforts. And that's been another criticism, of course, of, you know, of the church, is that we don't see enough humanitarian efforts on an international scale, or, you know, or a local scale. And so I don't know. I'm a little bit excited now for the possibility of trying to create a mentality within my local congregation of, we should really be out there serving in our community, and we should be standing shoulder to shoulder with the Catholics down the street and providing food for the homeless, and what we can do from a very localized area.
Awesome.
And, you know, so the first thing that I looked up was, there's on the 25th of October, there's a day, it's called Make a Difference Day. And I don't remember who it's sponsored by. I think it's USA Magazine, Make a Difference Day. And there's, I found an event that's taking place in South Ogden, where they're going to be providing haircuts and winter clothing and food to homeless people and poor children. So my first event is going to be that, and getting people to mobilize around Sweet. That in about 10 days. And, you know, I don't know. I just think that's where we need to be. That's where we need to go. And hopefully, like what Jody said, when we kind of see, you know, this movie, as well as, I mean, it's clear from our last general conference, you know, when we had two people speaking in their native tongue. Now, I'm not going to get into the, you know, how it was translated across our own television right. screens. But the fact that they even permitted them to speak in their own native tongues, that opens it up to a lot more speakers. First of all, people who don't know English are now going to be able to speak at general conference, which I think is great. But it, once again, just, we keep getting these little drops from the church to say, hey, we aren't the white soccer mom image that everybody associates us with. Right. I mean, even though we kind of are, statistically speaking, but still not really. Right. I mean, there's more members outside of Utah than there are inside of Utah.
Yeah. We're shifting for sure.
Yeah. We're shifting.
Nice.
There are more
nice.
Members inside the United States than there are inside the United States. And so it goes even further than Utah. And also, I really am so glad to hear you say that, Brian, because I've been hearing that there are missions who are beginning to shift things, so that the missionaries in the missions are spending more and more hours in community service, that they're not tracting or proselyting so much, but their contacts are strictly through community service with no strings attached. And then this last conference, I kept looking for how many times the theme of caring for the poor and the needy was brought up. And more than I have seen in 4 years since it became the fourth mission of the church. And so I thought it was interesting once we saw the movie, after seeing so many references to that, and in some cases the entire talk, in the case of Elder Holland, being about caring for the poor and needy. And my hope is that, again, that this is the message that gets through to members. We cannot truly be claiming to be a part of this gospel if we're not doing this work. And I think this can take us in a good direction. I commented on that one thread about what Dad said at the beginning of that paper at Sunstone, how, you know, really, What legacy are we leaving? To spend a huge amount of time and resource possibly arguing historical points or differences of opinion or who has the right to do what or what a marriage looks like when there are people at the door in need and they're poor in physical things or in spirit, and we are not addressing that need. And until we do, can we truly claim to be following Christ? So I think when we really look at the work we're supposed to be doing, which is to bring people to Christ, part of it requires that we ourselves are turning towards Christ. And this seeing the great work that's being done by people on the other side of the world compared to what we do day to day here, I think is a good message for us.
Jody, there's on that same thread that you're talking about, the one that I started about the movie, one of the things that I said in there that I think is appropriate to mention now was I felt a little bit ashamed of myself after watching the movie, because I'm a historian and I'm a sociologist. So I spend hours and hours and hours in historical documentation. I speak at history conferences. I live in the world of history, of the things that have happened in the past. So my life is consumed by those burning questions that everybody asks about the early church. Of course, I do a lot more comparative of other churches in that time period. But nonetheless, I felt like, what am I doing? You know, does this really matter? It doesn't matter to these people. That's how I felt after watching this movie, is how would knowing the nuances of Joseph Smith's decisions in Nauvoo affect these folks that are being depicted on the screen
right.
at all? Would it matter to them? Would it be a benefit for them to know that, you know, that we've had some questionable things happen in the past? I mean, because we talk about that a lot on social media. We talk about how the church has a responsibility, and I do believe it does. I believe it needs to be responsible with its history. There's no question about it. We've brushed it under the carpet for far too long, and we've shirked the conversation. And you know, we need to have the open and honest conversation about our history. But at the same time, what does it really matter to these folks who are finding the vehicle that the church provides to be something that is enabling them to doing good things and bring meaning into their life?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, both of you. And Michael, jump in on that too, because that was one of the things I was going to bring is, you know, we in this blogger knackle or, you know, the progressive side of Mormonism or the, you know, kind of the communities that, you know, kind of grew up around Mormon stories and, you know, the different podcasting groups, we tend to like, you know, it's our lens is so huge. And I looked at these folks and I said, every one of these six people is a better person than me, you know, in terms of just purity of heart. And it just reminds me again that, you know, yes, there's legitimacy to the stuff for those of us that are called to these kinds of questions, but I just celebrate goodness. And I saw six people that called me, and like you said in your heart, Brian, you felt a little bit ashamed, you know, that they called me to want to step up in terms of just my straight up, you know, I don't need to have a complicated mindset to do good in the world, you know. And did Michael, does that make any sense to you? Or
let's
draw you back in and just you know, your reactions and, you know, what emerged for you as you saw?
So when I went in to see this movie with a huge chip on my shoulder, and what ended up happening with me was kind of what you guys have been explaining. I think Mormons that are internet Mormons as opposed to chapel Mormons, right? We tend to wait for every hiccup that comes from the church and then, oh, look, the church did. Oh, yeah, wow, I can't believe they did this. Oh, once again. And we get worked up. And for me, the overarching theme that came out of this movie was, you know what? Mormonism works really well for a lot of people, and I sometimes forget that. And it was a good reminder how well the gospel of Jesus Christ as filtered through the Mormon lens, how well it really does. And we saw it over and over again, how these, you know, the first five stories, more or less, showed how people that are LDS are blessing the lives of other people. And then the last one with Dawn, the woman that got pregnant in her teens, it showed how the gospel blessed her specifically. And although I have some critiques, that story spoke to me a lot, pretty deeply on a personal level. My brother and I are we're biracial. We're not part black. Our biological mother's Guatemalan. And she kind of checked out of our lives when I was around six or seven. And my father remarried twice. The third time, things stuck. And she was a white woman, born and raised in rural Idaho. And when my father proposed to her and she accepted and they got married, my mother's family, without any question, Paul and I were part of their family, as if we had been there our entire lives. And it's Mormonism, it really does make... It makes good people. It does, when it does it right, you know.
Yeah,
and
right.
And I saw that in the life of Dawn, and I've seen that in the life of my life and the life of my brother. You know, these two brown boys that, you know, and my dad married into a white Idaho family, and there wasn't there. We were there. You know, grandpa was grandpa, and uncles were uncles, and my mom eventually, now we call her mom, you know, she's mother to us, to me that's beautiful. The other thing that struck me as you guys were talking was kind of how Mormonism works on the ground. As soon as you get outside of middle class North America, where the questions of, like Brian was bringing up, aren't issues, it's, you know, where are we going to get our food and just being good. And I have a friend who, Fatima, she's going to Harvard Divinity School, and she shared with me a wonderful quote from one of her professors. He said, theology must be viewed and taught from the margins. I think we forget as Gentiles that we were the outsiders listening in on a very private and intimate conversation between Jesus and the Jews. We Gentiles were on the margins, outsiders.
Nice. Liberation theology and all that stuff brings up the same things.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I share a personal story? Michael, since you talked about your mom, can I talk about my mom for a second?
Yes.
So I was raised by a single mother. My parents divorced when I was two. And my mom ended up on public assistance for most of my life. When I was 11, she was contacted by missionaries. It was a neighbor of ours that was a member of the church, and referred my mom to them, and they came over and started teaching the lessons. And this was, of course, back in the days when the lessons were very scripted. And what my mom really saw in it, and what her friend promoted the most, was she could get food. That there was a bishop's storehouse that was available to stock up our fridges and, you know, our pantry, and to be a support, an economic support. And so that was really the conversion for my mother, was knowing that she was going to get some assistance. I don't know that she ever really knew the difference between the LDS church and any other church, theologically speaking, even going through the missionary discussions. I don't think that she ever really knew it as, wow, this is radically different than any other church out there. It was just, you know, okay, at the end of these discussions, I'm going to get a food order. And I used to be fairly derisive about that with her and say, well, Mom, you converted to the bishop's storehouse, not to the gospel. But then as I've gotten older and as I've seen more about the world and understand things, I think, a little more clearly, and then I think it's also emphasized, it can be taken from this film anyway, that is the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? What we do for others and how we help others. And I think that we sometimes tend to lose track of that, and particularly in our online discussions. What good the church really is doing in people's lives and in the world. And I understand that there's tremendous pain that is still being caused. We all see it. You know, we're far from being a holistically healing organization. I totally understand that, but man, it sure is nice. Yeah, exactly. But it sure is nice to break away from the one-sided perspective of it's all a terrible thing that has nothing good to offer the world, and see a little bit of a glimpse of the good it is doing.
And along that, along those lines, Brian, you know, in what I said earlier, you know, especially in, you know, all this effort that we put into debating things and getting information out there and everything, I think what we do or can do is look at truly how are we bringing people to Christ and feeding them literally, I think is top of the list. I think when we can offer to people what they need physically and emotionally and spiritually. And I think that's where the other parts come in. You work with history, and that is a real need for a lot of people. The need to really understand as well as walk in faith. The need to be able to sort through information and gain their own understanding and witness of it. It meets a need. I'm passionate about having a place of belonging for women and for LGBT. Anyone who wants to be a part of the church, that's my commitment, is that they can find a place here and participate fully. But beyond that, I think my commitment is that all people really see that they belong to this family and this world as part of God, and that we learn to see that in each other. If it comes through in my being active in raising awareness, in inviting people, in providing support, in being a part of a conversation, that may be different from providing a water tower in Nepal, but it feeds people in a different way. And so I think we do need to be aware. I know members who have tremendous resources. They sold everything. They moved to Africa, and they set up a clinic for AIDS patients. And it just amazes me. And that will probably not be what I do with my life. But if I can be seeking guidance and help to know how I can use my resources to feed the poor and the needy in whatever way they need, I really do believe Elder Holland when he said, how you do this, you may not know, but the Lord knows, and if you seek guidance, you'll be led. And sometimes all we can do is just give that dollar to someone, go and help feed people at a food bank. Maybe that's all we can do. But at the same time, there will be other times when we're led to other things. And I think that's what we need to look at. How are we living that promise, that covenant, that may not necessarily line up with the way we've always thought it needs to be?
Wonderful. Guys, let's just go final thoughts or anything that you'd hope to say today that you haven't shared, either about the movie or just this moment or something that's turned over in your heart in a new way. Michael, can I start with you?
Like I said, when I went to go see this movie, I went in with a huge chip on my shoulder, and I left softened. And then I spoke with some friends of mine who are feminists, had some critiques of it, and I totally got their point. I also spoke with some LDS friends of mine who are women of color, and they had some pretty valid criticisms as well. But the more I sit with it, the less angsty I've become with the movie. Still holding to some valid critiques, I would say. But it once again, it just reminded me of the goodness of this this faith tradition that I seem to frequently lose sight of, and I can only imagine kind of bringing in what you guys were saying earlier, what it's like for my bishop. Our ward is in a poorer part of town. You know, we have halfway houses here for drug addiction programs and things like that. And so that's who my bishop is dealing with every day, you know. And then in the mix of that, he has Mike Barker and then he has Geraldine Hasselpool as ward members, right?
Nice.
I mean, the guy lost the ward member roulette, right? And so, here's an example. Last night, Geraldine and I were speaking with our bishop at the church. And a knock comes on the door, and he opens it up, and the man goes, "Can I speak with you, Bishop?" He goes, "Well, give me just a second." And so we're done, and we come out, and the man is standing just outside the door there with it cracked open just a little bit, and you can smell cigarette smoke, right? And then he comes in. I've never seen this man before, but my bishop obviously knows him. So immediately he goes from dealing with the angsty Barker and the angsty Pool to dealing with this guy who looks like he's probably – seriously, he's down and out, right? And that's, I think that's what the gospel is right there, is that. That's what it is.
Thanks, Michael. Man, that was beautiful. Brian, where would you go for a final kind of comment?
Yeah, so I attended a LDS Church History Symposium at BYU earlier in the year, and the theme of it was the international church. President Uchtdorf was a keynote speaker in it. It was really a wonderful two-day conference that was held, and I'm embarrassed to say this, but they gave out a book at that conference, and the reason I'm embarrassed to say that is because until about 15 minutes before this conference call, this call, I completely forgot that they gave me this book. And it was a book that was edited by Reed Nielsen, who's the executive director of the LDS Church History Library. And it's titled Global Mormonism in the 21st Century. And some of the issues that it touches on, it's a four-part book. And the first part is Joseph Smith, Mormonism in the World. Part two is Missionary Work in a Global Village. Part three is Humanitarian Outreach in the Latter-day Saints. With all sorts of great articles in there about what the church is doing humanitarian-wise. Part four, church education initiatives in the era of globalization. And then the last one is international challenges facing the church. Some of those including the paradox of religious pluralism and family in the global church. Like I said, I just put this book aside. It was kind of like, oh, that's nice. It's a little freebie from a conference.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't placed enough emphasis on how central this is to the church right now. I mean, this came again at an LDS history conference. We see it again played out in general conference with the emphasis on not only feeding the poor and attending to their needs, but also the international emphasis. We see it with this film again coming out. They're really giving us this message that we're growing internationally, and this is changing what the identity of Mormonism is and how we self-identify as members of a global community, as opposed to just a Utah community or even just a United States or American community. I think that there is, and this is my theory, is that we've kind of got this hemispheric model going on right now. You've got the Northern Hemisphere, which is a pretty tech-savvy, definitely steeped in the information age. And here we see a lot of at least rumors of fallout from people who are becoming disaffected through information that they're discovering online or whatever. But then you've got this whole other hemisphere below the equator, Latin America and Africa, where, as Terrell Givens put it when we were at a roundtable discussion with him earlier in the week, he said, you know, we're shifting from the suburban soccer mom to the mom who's trying to get water for her children. This is a real thing. And
yeah.
And I understand that the film comes across as a commercial intentionally so, it comes across as a commercial for the church. These are ideal types that were portrayed in the film. But think about what the church is saying by using those people as the ideal types, right? That's a pretty profound message, and it's a pretty big shift from even its earlier campaigns such as Family, It's About Time, those television commercials, which were so delightful, but they were always the suburban white family, and occasionally you might get a color, mm-hmm. right? And that was about it. But now the church is saying, no, this is what we want to portray as the identity of a Latter-day Saint. And they chose these six particular people, one of which was based in Utah, the other of which were mixed race, and also living in, and as we said, two of them living in different parts of the world. This is where we're going. We're not, this message isn't going to slow down. We will continue to feel more and more part of a global community. I hope that as we transition towards that, that we will continue to emphasize and do a better job of emphasizing what we can do to reach out to the world and the needs that the world has with the resources that we have. I hope that we can help our members capture a sense of ownership where our resources are going. And yeah, I'm talking about the finances of the church. I would love to see more publicity about the awareness of what we're doing already and expanding into those global markets. I think it would make us feel better, at least those of us who live in the online social world. It would make us feel better about some of our global expansion and maybe put into perspective some of the arguments that we've had in the past about, you know, whether the church should be building a mall, or maybe in this case, whether the church should be making a movie that it distributes nationally. I think that we will continue to see this emphasis grow, and I'm excited for it.
Awesome. Yeah, I am too. And I'm all, you know, Michael, you know, your blog's, you know, subheading is called Keeping Mormonism Weird. And I'm all for that too. And I love the uniqueness of our teachings and whatnot. But ultimately, I do think you learn more and you kind of get the bigger lessons from the pure service, from just, you know, trying to help somebody where they are, you know, in their setting versus trying to weave an elaborate worldview.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you. I remember when I first learned of podcasts, it was John DeLynn's interview of Richard Bushman. And at the mm-hmm. at the end, he essentially asked Richard Bushman to bear his testimony. So I was like, okay, here it comes. I know. No, you know what he said? He says, you know, so much goodness. I was like, what, dude? Yeah. And now, yeah. 10 years later, I'm like, yeah, I get it. It is about goodness. It really is.
Yeah, it pivoted for me to that towards too. And honestly, that was about the only testimony I could bear for a while, you know, was you know, being among people who were striving to grow and to serve each other, to care for each other, to expand their own, you know, hearts. And, you know, and actually the fact that that was about the only testimony I could bear for some of those really topsy-turvy years of mine, you know, it just stuck, you know. And even though I'm more affirming of truth claims in some areas than I was then, I'm glad for that shift in me. Thank you. Jody, we'll let you have the final word.
I appreciate that. It's been an interesting year for me to kind of look at, you know, balancing out my own journey to be Christ-like and to invite people to Christ, and being willing to let others, wherever they are with their journey, especially those in my ward and my stake, because it is hard. You know, we feel guided, we have our own experiences in our own direction. And it's not necessarily that others might not be on, you know, agree with us on it, but sometimes we actually feel impeded. I think that's one of the things that is hard for members of the church when they do feel that there is something really wonderful about this gospel and about being a part of the church community. And they feel that they are living the life that they're called to in this, and someone else in our own community might say or do something that actually makes that harder for us. It's difficult. And seeing this movie, you know, setting aside all of the exterior factors of the movie, but the movie itself, it was a little bit of a reminder, even if it was in a fairly finished off package, it was a reminder that really everyone is on their own journey. And for a church sponsored event to affirm that, to depict a variety to a certain extent, a variety of journeys and the way and the different ways that people were living it, it was comforting to me in a difficult way. I'm finding that a lot of things that bring comfort are also reminding me that it is difficult. That a reminder that, yes, there are people who are trying to do things that might be as unique and individual. They will also have those times when they wonder how they can go through another day, and yet they find a way to keep reaching out and keep listening and offering or receiving. And it doesn't mean it needs to be easy, but it is a very great, complex community and a reminder that there are as many different kinds of Mormons as there are Mormons. There are as many different paths that we walk as there are people, and to actually reach out so that it connects with each individual in the world being a part of this work was hopeful to me.
Gorgeous. Thank you very much for that, Jody, and all of you guys. I'm just going to say thanks very much, you guys. I really enjoyed the conversation, and it was fun. We talked about the movie. We talked that there are these wider things here, but I think we actually got here in the last 35, 40 minutes to really something really neat and affirming. And that's how I felt coming out of the movie. So listeners, I don't know if any of you, you know, will now decide to give this a shot. I think you ought to at least give it a shot when it comes out on Netflix. Catch it in the Legacy Theater. It is moving, you know. I try to be a skeptic and to have, you know, my academic lenses on and whatnot. But I was genuinely moved. I was moved by the goodness. And I was just moved again by a reminder that the church is not me and not everybody is a head case like me. that kind of thing where, you know, it's got to make some kind of sense to my brain and whatnot. I agree. Somebody here on this podcast said, I don't know that they would be aided in any way of any kind of importance by knowing some of the complications that we're aware of and know of it. So, you know, my bar's pretty low in terms of what I want the church to do. I just don't want them to make it harder for us, you know, who are called to this kind of journey. But for the most part, I'm perfectly happy to have a church that, you know, looks what is the bare, you know, it's take care of the widow, visit those in jail, you know, clothe the hungry, yeah, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. You know, if that's where the church is headed, thank goodness.
Absolutely. Amen. You know? Yeah, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys a lot. And listeners, please come and share your own experiences with the film. Push back on anything that we said that you didn't like while at the blog Feed the Hungry Podcaster. Any donations are always wonderfully appreciated. So thank you so for all that you do. And I appreciate the heck out of this great panel. And you're all good friends. Thank you for your generous sharing of your time this night.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening. And
as well.